Blog Talk Radio.
Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana El Bay. And tonight, we're going to deal with becoming a state national. Secure Pod in 1099. That's the name of the broadcast. We're going to deal with the following question. What is a state citizen? How can I become a national? What is the step-by-step process? What is the downside of this process? What about my passport? What gives me the right to become a national? What about my right to travel? These are just a few of the topics that we're going to deal with tonight. And we got quite a bit of information to bring to the table tonight. So I'm going to be running through this stuff and try to get as much into these 3 hours as I possibly can. Okay, so we're going to go do the commercials. Y'all hold your hat and we'll be right back.
The greatest move you can make beginning in 2022 is to move out of the public and into the private. That's how you get rid of student loans, child support, mortgages, foreclosures, and all this kind of business. Go to TahakaDebtElimination.org. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org. Fill out my contact us form by leaving your email address, and I'll rush my free report straight to your email box. Our economy is in shambles today for people who insist on living in the public. Move into the private. Make an easy transaction. Go to www.TahakaDebtElimination.org. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org. Fill out the contact us form and I'll rush you my free report.
Okay, we back. Now we're going to start up where we left off at last 2 weeks ago before Dr. Williams came in and did his thing. But we're going to start off where we left at with Mavercroft and keep on going so I can cram this information in for y'all. So it's a good idea if you got paper and pencil handy so we can get this stuff down on paper so we can take notes and keep it rolling. So y'all hold your hat. Here we go.
It doesn't have anything to do with men or women. So I get a little crazy when people say, oh, you're a natural person.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not. I am not a legal fiction.
So a definition would be a
a real human being, right? That's a good word.
Can't say human being either.
No. Yeah, not that either.
No. We use man and woman.
Man and woman, okay. Well, let's go with that then. But
and if you want to really generic that, I just say man. Like I just say, well, man to, if I'm talking to somebody, I say, well, man to man. Because we are of mankind. That's what
that's
we're
right, mankind. Yes, indeed. Okay, point being here, there is a website anyway where you can get Mary's book that we have been talking about, and that the website there is natural-person.ca. And I guess that your the other website that I gave out at the beginning might not be either your either then. The spiritualeconomicsnow.net, is that not yours either?
Yeah, no, that's my blog.
That's your blog. Okay. Okay, yeah. Very good.
Rather than write another book, which I realized, you know, like the first one would sort of be outdated the minute it hit the internet, I started writing articles. So, yes, spiritualeconomicsnow.net is my blog, and what I do is I post articles, and you can just go back and back and back, and there's archives and stuff, and so you can read sort of the latest and greatest of what's going on. And my most recent one, I think, really spells it out pretty well because I really touch on this OID process and the two forms of accounting, because the public accounting has absolutely nothing to do with private accounting. In other words, private meaning between you and me. The public is completely separate. And in fact, if indeed they intend to charge us, what they're doing is they're obstructing the bankruptcy and they're in violation of public policy, and that is unlawful. And we can go after them for that.
Mary, let's take a short break right here then. And again, the website is spiritualeconomicsnow.net, and I will have that linked up on Red Eyes. But stay with us, Mary, and we'll continue after this break, okay?
Okey-do.
We'll continue with Mary Croft in our members section. We are going to talk more about birth certificates and the procedure of registration you go through when you're born, and the fact that a corporation is set up as an artificial person to represent you. We'll talk more about Admiralty Law, or Law of the Sea, and the esoteric connection to the words like a bank currency and ship and their legal writing. We'll talk more about the banksters behind this, their mentality, and where to go to learn more and keep up to speed with Mary's findings. So head on over to redicecreations.com. Click on subscribe, sign up, tune in, and take advantage of our member section. More radio and video material is available for you there. Thanks to producer. Welcome, Red Eyes members. We are talking with Mary Croft about money, banking, law, and commerce, and much more for that matter. A very interesting conversation. And what I'd like to do right now is to get into a little bit more and just to clarify a few things about what actually happens when you are born, so to speak. We're going to get into this about birth certificates and what actually happens that a corporation, so to speak, is being set up alongside you as a man. So Mary, if you will, in this day and age, before you, in the first segment you were talking about after a certain date, people were obliged to go and register their child, basically. So what happens today when that takes place, at least if we are talking to it in the context of the US and Canada? They go and they register the child to their government, so to speak. What happens at that point?
Yeah, it's really, it is quite a recent thing. And that is prior to the 30s. Nobody registered births. That was not necessary. And because apparently, I don't know, but apparently it's because it was registered in the family Bible. I mean, you wrote down the child's name and when he was born, and that was sort of done, right? But what happened due to the bankruptcy, they said, we are going to have to capture the future labor and productivity of the people, because we no longer have the minerals, the gold, the silver. We can't, we have nothing left to pay the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the interest on the loan that they lent us. Well, of course, the foolishness was that they ever got entangled with the World Bank in the first place, but which is unfortunate because we were tricked into it. But that's the way it is. So then they said, well, what else can we give them? We've given them all the gold and silver, and by the way, there is no gold in Fort Knox, that same cliche. So then they said, the only thing we have is the productivity and the future labor of the people of the country. They will create the interest that we can pay the IMF. Otherwise, we're in deep trouble. So that's why, you know, 50 years ago, not 50, okay, let's say 80,
yes.
You know, people just weren't, there weren't any crimes because there was no win for anybody. I'm not saying there was zero crimes. I'm saying there weren't anywhere near the number there are now, because there was no win for there to be crimes. Consequently, you know, I mean, I think it was Thomas Zaz who says the reason there are sick people is because there's doctors, not the other way around. In other words, they needed us to break the law so they could fine us in order to get the funds to pay off the interest on the national debt. So they started creating these absolutely absurd statutes. I mean, I don't have to tell you. There's over 60 million statutes, at least on this continent, where one false move and you've broken the law. Allegedly, apparently, that's what they say.
Yeah.
You know, what about seatbelt laws? You weren't wearing a seatbelt. Well, who did that hurt? So that's not it. It's if we catch you, we get to fine you. And if we fine you, then we have that much more to pay the World Bank in interest. Well, as you know, the interest is just now completely vertical. So what happened was they said, what's the best way to do this? And that is tax them on every turn, every move they make. Applying for university, they have to put a signature. They have to an application. You used to be able to think back to when you and I were kids. I don't know how young you are, but anyway, they used to be able to go into a bank, say, you have bank accounts to offer, and they say, yep, and they'd hand you a signature card, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's your account number, your passbook, and thanks for the signature card so that when you write a check, we know what your signature is. And that was it. And now you have to apply for an account?
Yes.
It's insanity. And you have to agree to the innumerable terms and conditions of this unilateral contract, and then they have your signature. And I don't mean on a signature card. They have your signature to this contract. So guess what? They start out by robbing you. Well, that never used to happen. Not when I was a kid. So once again, I say you cannot go through a day without violating at least one of these statutes. Why? Because they want to fine you. They have to fine you because they're sunk. They know it's over if they can't pay the interest on the national debt.
Yes, to have a traffic tickets, kind of minor things on the surface, at least, this brings in the money in order to keep this system of debt going. Isn't that right?
That's right. But as I explained before, the money really doesn't keep the system afloat.
Yes.
What it does is it pays people like judges and municipalities and the people who are actually confiscating the cash. Because remember, when you pay any alleged debt with a debt, you've doubled the debt. So it isn't about offsetting corporate debt. If they truly and honestly wanted their books balanced, they would say, would you please sign this for me? Then I can take it over here. Then we can simply go into our computers and offset the debt that we just created by charging you. We can offset the debt. But offset of debt isn't what they want. They want a slave labor force, and they want the people in high places to have our cash because they use cash the same way we do.
Yes.
Get what we want. So the best way to create a corporation that could be charged for all these misdemeanors and violations of statutes was to have women register their babies' names as a corporation.
Hmm.
Now, it just so happens that one of my boys does not have a birth certificate. Now, if I had that, that was 17 years ago nearly. If I had it to do again, I would have gotten him a birth certificate. And I think even in my book, I said we should not have gotten our kids' birth certificates. But yes, we should, because we want them to have this unlimited credit. See, we saw it as, with a birth certificate, they're charging us. That's not really true. They're charging the name, and they're holding us as surety. In other words, the guy who has to pay the debt. But now that we know how to do that, see, now I wish I had a birth certificate.
Then it could be turned into a benefit, right?
Exactly. It's now a benefit to us. They can charge all they want, and it's no threat to us now. But back then, we were saying, holy cow, a birth certificate only gets you into trouble because they keep charging it, and we have to pay it. What if he didn't even have a birth certificate? There's no way they could charge him.
Hmm.
Well, that's true, too. But, as you say, he's missing out on all the real fun.
I guess it also depends on what you want to do, so to speak. If you want to kind of disconnect from the system altogether, then that would be a good option. But in this case, in case your child or yourself want to maintain within the structure that is there, the governmental society structure or system, then it's a potentially good way to still operate within that in order to benefit from what it can offer us, right?
Precisely, and that's it. We do have an option. We can go sit under a tree in nature and drink the creek water and operate like that, or we can continue the way we've always lived. But yes, we need that almost like a credit card birth certificate in order to operate in commerce. And probably most of us are not willing to give up our lifestyle. Some of us are, of course. I do know people that we're headed for the hills.
Yes.
We're done, right?
Yes.
And they do. They check out of the system. But it might be a little bit difficult for them to leave the country if they choose. And, you know, it's even though the United Nations has their Declaration of Human Rights says any man is free to leave the country and return to his own country. So not really, but it would take a little bit of time, essentially saying, okay, you want me to play the game? Drop the documents. This is your problem, not mine.
Right.
So it's possible, but let's face it, most of us want to, shall we say, be free within the system that's actually restricted us. But in other words, we now know there is a way to operate. So I have to come up with a way to get my son handled here.
Do you think that there are people within the system that actually have learned this? Let's say the people within, high up in these big corporations or in insurance, what have you, that actually have discovered this or through some other means have actually learned to utilize the system in this way. Do you think that's the case here?
Absolutely, no question. They have what's called treasury cards. But keep in mind, this is the very top of the pyramid. And I will say this, a friend of mine was having some kind of meeting.
As a secured party and creditor, can you buy a home, a car, and other items you need and want? The answer is yes, and there are documents you use to do just that. Catch my radio podcast at Blog Talk Radio. Go to TahakaDebtElimination.org. Fill out the box with your email address that say join our mailing list, and I will send you my free report. You got credit problems? Contact me at TahakaDebtElimination.org. Let's stay in honor and get into the private. When you know what the Internal Revenue Service is, and what their job and duties are, you can use the correct way to deal with them. There's a remedy for you to use. When it comes to the IRS, go to TahakaDebtElimination.org. Fill out the box with your email address that says join our mailing list. The Internal Revenue Service is a private for profit corporation, but there are rules and regulations. Get my free report. Learn about what's going on in America today. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org. www.ifreeinternationalfinance.org. Lose your fear for the Internal Revenue Service by knowing exactly what to do based on what you know about them and what remedies are available to you to use. TahagaDebtElimination.org. Peace.
And in attendance was a former vice president of one of the major five banks here in the provinces. And they were talking about this, and the VP, the retired VP, sat there with a stunned look on his face and said, "You know, I knew there was something, I just couldn't figure it out." So even the vice presidents are not in on this.
Right.
It takes top CEOs, presidents, and the literally the global elite. And yes, they have access to their treasury account that looks pretty much just like a credit card, and they can walk into Sears and put down this card and get their lawnmower, as if they do their own shopping, eh? But anyway,
right.
Put down this card, and that card accesses their treasury account, which we have not been able to do yet, but we can circuitously. In other words, when I say we haven't been able to do it, I mean we haven't gotten the card. But it's there, we know, so far where we've arrived is that we simply hand out the correct forms and then, you know, it's just a question of time before we get reimbursed.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, but again, I just want to clarify the forms and the specific that you're talking about right now, that is only something that is applying to people within North America. Is that correct?
No. What I'm saying is these are tax forms. Now, what the people in Europe can do, if they're so inclined, is to do a little digging and find out which of their tax forms correspond with the same IRS tax forms. And when you grasp the purpose of each of them, then it's probably not so hard to find. However, I will say this, that my friend in England is having a heck of a time trying to match the British tax forms with the IRS forms.
Uh-huh.
Even we here in Canada, I don't mean I'm in Canada, but I mean
sure.
the Canada forms.
Sure.
We're having a little trouble with that, too. We're missing a couple. So what my friend in England said is, it might just behoove everybody, now imagine how bogged down the IRS is going to get, it might behoove all of us to get what's called employment identification numbers and international tax identification numbers, which come from the IRS. They're international, which means then you can dabble with the IRS. Now, this friend I just mentioned to you, I talked to her this morning, I said, you know, the joke is they're going to have to hire more IRS agents in order to deal with us. And I said, but they're sure not going to tell us. And she said, oh, yes, they do tell us. It's on the news that they've had to hire more IRS agents. And I said, well, I'm surprised they would tell us. And they said, well, they said that they've hired more because they're cracking down on us. And I said, no, that's not true. They're hiring more because we are now demanding reimbursement. We're demanding checks. And they had to hire people in order to get this handled.
Right.
This is good news, and of course she saw it as bad news, right?
That's pretty interesting.
So things are looking up. We've got more IRS agents. Now, I know most people are going to hear that as, oh, no, now they're really going to come after us. No, that's not true.
Huh.
They've got more agents to do our work that we're demanding of them.
Absolutely fascinating. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
So, I mean, let's talk about that again, or backtrack yet a little bit again, and talk about that they're setting up a corporation, correct, alongside when you're registering your child. Is that correct?
Right. So they set up a corporation, which, of course, they can charge now, right? Because what happened was the mom turned over legal title. Keep in mind, there's equitable title and legal title. So they turned over legal title to the state, or in this case, the province, or whatever you call wherever it is you registered birth. So now they have legal title to that entity. And what they try and do is convince us that that entity is a man, and it isn't.
Right.
A piece of paper couldn't be a man. A name can't be a man. A picture can't be a man, right?
Yes.
Only men can be men, and women can be women. But so inevitably, you know, you hand the cop your driver's license and they say, is this you? Well, what a moronic question. Of course it's not I. It's a picture. You're looking at me here.
It's a representation of yourself, isn't it?
There you go, yeah. And they try and trick us into saying that we are a name. For example, you go into court and they call the name, you know, Sam Smith, and this guy stands up and the judge says, "What's your name?" And he says, "Sam Smith." Bingo, you just contracted in to being the one that got charged, when in fact it wasn't the man who got charged, it was the name that got charged, because the name is the name of a corporation. Now, if Sam Smith is smart, he'll simply say, "I'm here about that matter." Well, who are you? Well, I'm the authorized representative of the name of the corporation you just called.
Hmm.
In other words, make the distinction, because what they do right from the get-go is they try and make us believe that we are that name. And when that name gets charged, whether it's a traffic ticket or whatever, that we're it. We're not it. Hmm. But we can choose to be surety. Now, for a long time, we were avoiding suretyship, simply saying, I went to court one time, I said, "But that's not, that name is not I." Well, they locked me up for that, so I didn't do that again. But what I should have said, of course, is, "I'm the authorized representative, you know, what's the charge? Here, I'll set it off for you. What's the problem? What's it going to take?" But, so they get very upset when you try and deny suretyship. Well, now what we do is we take on suretyship. So instead of saying, "Nope, that's not me," we now say, sure, what's it? Here, I'll sign for it. What do you want? Go ahead, tell me. How much? I'll sign for it. Right here. I'm not frightened of suretyship anymore. Where we used to be, we were saying, well, if we admit to being the name, then they'll come after us. Well, no, we make it clear that we're not the name and that we are willing to handle the charges. But first, show me the charges, and they tend never to do that. But that's another thing. So getting back to the corporation, they created the corporation for the purpose of charging. Simple as that. In order for them to create debt on the books, so that we will pay their debt. But it's their debt, not ours. Same as credit card. I get crazy when people say, "Oh, I've got so much credit card debt." You know, I said, well, no, you don't. The credit card company has the debt.
Hmm.
Now, you want to set it off for them, or are you going to slave labor for them?
Yes. I mean, it's incredible, the system that has been set up here and how it's being used. And I mean, I even want to go back to the idea of why the fact that this is something called, you know, we can call it Admiralty Commercial Law, or some have referred to it actually as the law of the water, and even in regards to how we the names and the etymology that we use. You just mentioned surety ship, for instance. We're talking about these kind of it's like it's the law of the water, right? That the commercial law has to do with waters and commerce in regards to how ships were trading in way back when, you know, many hundreds of years ago. Is there any connection at all there, do you think?
Oh, you're absolutely accurate. And my favorite example, of course, is the word birth.
Yes.
Ships are birthed.
Yes.
Babies are born. But they call it birth. I mean, if that's not right from the get-go, eh? Talk about trying to make us or put us into Admiralty Maritime Law. You're right. I mean, and it never ends. I mean, the number of words that, well, you just picked on surety ship, yeah. It's endless. The number, of course, person is my favorite, but and includes. The word includes. Okay, for example, you know, it took me years. You'd think I would have done this, but only about in the past year I looked up the word Canada.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think I would have done this sooner, but anyway, I looked up the word Canada.
Mm.
And what it said was, first of all, it said, for greater understanding. Well, doesn't that immediately make you think, well where's the other understanding? Like, did you write something before this? So what do you mean by for greater understanding? Greater than what? Anyway, so you keep reading, and it says, Canada includes the inland waters and the territorial seas. Well, it just so happens that the word includes means. It doesn't mean, for example, if you and I have a party and we say, well, let's have a party and let's include the neighbors. That means you and I have some friends here and also the neighbors, right?
Mm-hmm.
What they mean when they say, let's have a party, and that includes the neighbors, it means only the neighbors.
Hmm.
So when they say Canada includes the inland waters and the territorial seas, it means Canada means only water.
Really?
There is no land called Canada.
Huh.
It's only water. So when people say, were you born in Canada? I say, do I look as if I have fins and gills? No.
Right, right.
Born on the land.
Yes.
And in attendance was a former vice president of one of the major five banks here in the provinces. And they were talking about this, and the VP, the retired VP, sat there with a stunned look on his face and said, you know, I knew there was something, I just couldn't figure it out. So even the vice presidents are not in on this.
Right.
It's top CEOs, presidents, and the literally the global elite. And yes, they have access to their treasury account that looks pretty much just like a credit card, and they can walk into Sears and put down this card and get their lawnmower, as if they do their own shopping, eh? But anyway,
right.
Put down this card, and that card accesses their treasury account, which we have not been able to do yet, but we can circuitously. In other words, when I say we haven't been able to do it, I mean we haven't gotten the card. But it's there, we know, so far where we've arrived is that we simply hand out the correct forms, and then, you know, it's just a question of time before we get reimbursed.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt, but again, I just want to clarify the forms and the specific that you're talking about right now, that is only something that is applying to people within North America. Is that correct?
No. What I'm saying is these are tax forms. Now, what the people in Europe can do, if they're so inclined, is to do a little digging and find out which of their tax forms correspond with the same IRS tax forms. And when you grasp the purpose of each of them, then it's probably not so hard to find. However, I will say this, that my friend in England is having a heck of a time trying to match the British tax forms with the IRS forms.
Uh-huh.
Even we here in Canada, I don't mean I'm in Canada, but I mean
sure.
the Canada forms.
Sure.
We're having a little trouble with that, too. We're missing a couple. So what my friend in England said is it might just behoove everybody, you know, imagine how bogged down the IRS is going to get, it might behoove all of us to get what's called employment identification numbers and international tax identification numbers, which come from the IRS. They're international, which means then you can dabble with the IRS. Now, this friend I just mentioned to you, I talked to her this morning, I said, you know, the joke is they're going to have to hire more IRS agents in order to deal with us. And I said, but they're sure not going to tell us. And she said, oh, yes, they do tell us. It's on the news that they've had to hire more IRS agents. And I said, well, I'm surprised they would tell us. And they said, well, they said that they've hired more because they're cracking down on us. And I said, no, that's not true. They're hiring more because we are now demanding reimbursement. We're demanding checks, and they had to hire people in order to get this handled.
Right.
This is good news, and of course she saw it as bad news, right?
That's pretty interesting.
So things are looking up. We've got more IRS agents. Now, I know most people are going to hear that as, oh, no, now they're really going to come after us. No, that's not true.
Huh.
They've got more agents to do our work that we're demanding of them.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's fascinating. So, I mean, let's talk about that again, or backtrack yet a little bit again, and talk about that they're setting up a corporation, correct, alongside when you're registering your child. Is that correct?
Right. So they set up a corporation, which, of course, they can charge now, right? Because what happened was the mom turned over legal title. Keep in mind, there's equitable title and legal title. So they turned over legal title to the child, to the state, or in this case, the province, or whatever you call wherever it is you registered birth. So now they have legal title to that entity. And what they try and do is convince us that that entity is a man. And it isn't.
Right.
The paper couldn't be a man. A name can't be a man. A picture can't be a man, right?
Yes.
Only men can be men, and women can be women. But So inevitably, you know, you hand the cop your driver's license and they say, is this you? Well, what a moronic question. Of course it's not I. It's a picture. You're looking at me here.
It's a representation of yourself, isn't it?
There you go, yeah. And they try and trick us into saying that we are a name. For example, you go into court and they call the name, you know, Sam Smith, and this guy stands up and the judge says, what's your name? And he says, Sam Smith. Bingo, you just contracted in to being the one that got charged, when in fact it wasn't the man who got charged, it was the name that got charged, because the name is the name of a corporation. Now, if Sam Smith is smart, he'll simply say, I'm here about that matter. Well, who are you? Well, I'm the authorized representative of the name of the corporation you just called. In other words, make the distinction, because what they do right from the get-go is they try and make us believe that we are that name. And when that name gets charged, whether it's a traffic ticket or whatever, that we're it. We're not it. But we can choose to be surety. Now, for a long time, we were avoiding suretyship, simply saying, I went to court one time, I said, but that name is not I. Well, they locked me up for that, so I didn't do that again. But what I should have said, of course, is, I'm the authorized representative, you know, what's the charge? Here, I'll set it off for you. What's the problem? What's it going to take? So they get very upset when you try and deny suretyship. Well, now what we do...
And where do you go to check up? Do you use like a law dictionary? What do you use to check this up?
I'm trying to think, where did I look that up? I think I looked up the word Canada in the Interpretations Act, I think. I think that might have been it. And the word includes, but you got to remember, there truly is a language called legalese. I mean, it truly does exist.
What did you call it? Say it again.
It's called legalese.
Uh-huh.
Like, it really does exist. And it's the language of lawyers, of the bar.
Yes, yes.
And they change the meanings, as you can see. I think includes is my favorite. But the other one is person. And person means corporation or legal fiction. It hasn't anything to do with man-woman. So when somebody says, well, you're a nice person, you know, I mean, when I hear that, well... Actually, no, I'm not. I'm a woman. Maybe a nice woman, I may not be. But, so, you know, this is just sort of for the purposes of training, you know.
Yes, yes.
People up on their language, you know. But that's fun, and once you get over that, that's enough. But but the words are absolutely incredible. For example, you'll always hear it in court. Or, you know, well, do you understand? Well, no, I don't understand, which means I refuse to stand under your jurisdiction. You haven't proven any authority over me, so no, I do not stand under it. I don't understand. And yet, they're pretending that what it means is, do you know what the hell I'm talking about?
Right.
It's not what they're saying, but it's what it sounds like. So they'll trip you up at any turn. And so it does help to know the meanings of a lot of these words, most of which will absolutely stun you when you go, what? Is that what they mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. It's downright deception.
But, I mean,
you're having fun with it.
Does this draw us back to the those who began this system? I mean, again, I'm thinking back to the old kind of merchants and those who were the initial kind of traders between nations, and that they were setting up a kind of a artificial system to operate outside the normal law of the land, so to speak, and that when they were doing this, they could also consequently supplant this later onto the law of the land, and now everyone is actually operating within this law of water. So do you think there is a connection? If you go back a little bit, I mean, we could talk about the Templars, what have you. We can talk about the originators of the banking system itself, right? Isn't there a big connection there?
Yeah, I think you're right, and I confess I'm not completely up to speed on the history, but you're absolutely accurate about the fact that it all did start on the high seas, and it had to do with ports and the seas and piracy, and in other words, England allowed certain pirates to steal certain the goods from certain ships, just not English ships. It was, it's barbaric.
Yes.
You know, and how this all came about. And yes, it all had to do with trading, and I'm sure the East India Company, and all this comes into play. Well, then, in order to control the people on the land, they just carried it over.
Yes.
It was, and they used the same words, birthing, and so essentially, and even we call our bodies vessels.
Yes.
They're vessels. Like, you know what I mean? It's so absurd.
And you know, it's like, you know, we're talking about this idea that, I mean, just look at the word bank, for instance, right? That this is, I think, I mean, Jordan Maxwell and another guy called Jason Whitney did a lecture about this a while back. Where I listened to this, very interesting, and they were talking even about the fact that, you know, there's even, in regards to currency or the currency or the flow of money has to do with water. And even the fact that you're being charged, that this has to do with electricity and things of this nature. Have you heard about that?
Oh, yes, yes. It's very accurate. And charge and closing the circuit. And that's why we say we close the accounts. And, yeah, as you say, the bank of the river, it's all about water. And then, of course, I guess you could say, well, we're 80% water or 75% water. So maybe it applies to us in some,
yes,
some surreptitious manner.
In some esoteric way, they've found a way to kind of supplant this, and I mean, in a way, it's as you say, it's logical in that sense. Then, but again, it's not applicable to what we actually are want out from the system, because again, this is a system that has been subsequently or afterwards, if you like, been supplanted above the natural or the real system that was there to begin with, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and this is why when we write a lot of documents these days, we're very careful to say that, you know, we are a man, or in my case, a woman, born on the land. In other words, you don't get jurisdiction or authority over me because I wasn't birthed, and I wasn't birthed on water. I'm of the land, over which you have no authority unless I grant you it.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Yes. And, you know, before, Mary, you were talking about national debt, that that's a big, you know, originator, so to speak, why we've come kind of gotten in this mess that we're in right now. That implies to me, at least, you know, these are, that's this big international kind of organizations that are behind the creation of this. We could, for instance, then talk about the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. Do you think that they are, you know, a big crook, so to speak, in this matter, and one of the originators on why we're living in the system we are living in right now?
Yeah, I wonder if you happen to see Aaron Russo's flick called From Freedom to Fascism.
Yes, I saw it a while back, yes.
Yeah, it's awfully negative, but he did mention one thing that I think is worth noting, and that is that he had a conversation with one of the Rothschilds. Wasn't it the Rothschilds?
With, I think it was Nicholas Rothschild or something like that, one of his sons, David's sons, I think.
Yeah, I think he's the baby, but I don't know. Anyway, and he essentially said, here's what's going to happen, and it was just crazy, and I think Rousseau kind of said, like, why are you doing that? And I don't recall a specific answer, but to me, what came over was, well, because we can.
Yes.
Like, why not?
Yes.
It's a game for us.
It's
Congress is a game to these people. They created this craziness, and they thought, hey, we can rule the world. We can control all the people in all the world. And, hey, what fun. Let's try this.
Yes.
So I don't, you know, I'm not saying that they're evil. I actually think they are, but I'm not saying they're evil. I'm saying this is just their role on this planet. They just said, they came up with this scathingly brilliant concept, and they said, let's try this. Let's see what happens. So they implemented a banking system, which was based on debt, which is insanity, as you know, is based on usury. And usury is ethically, or I guess I should say it's unethical.
Yes.
It's just something you would not do to somebody you love.
Exactly, and the important thing here as well, I think, that you mentioned is that they haven't asked permission from anyone to do this. They just kept themselves in a position just to do it. They have done it, and I'm drawn back to that old statement that if you're, you know, I don't know what the originator of it is from, but it basically states that, you know, if you're dumb enough, so to speak, to go along with it, then you kind of deserve to go along with it. And that's the kind of mentality behind some of these people, that they have this idea that, you know, if you're not looking at the details and studying the system that you're involved in, you're potentially might be fooled by it. And to a certain extent, I agree with that, because you need to know what the system is all about, right? If you're going to, especially if you're in the system that is that you can utilize, because what you have explained for us here is that if you're in this structure, in this system, you can actually use it to your benefit. But that means that you have to be smart enough in order to learn how to operate it. Isn't that right?
That's right. And the thing that we find most annoying, of course, is that most people don't even want to know this.
Yes.
And so we're forced to walk away and say, well, darn it all, watch out. And especially people, you know, who are, you know, the old, you're never a prophet in your own land, you can say it to your friends, and they just sort of say, well, I don't want to talk about that right now. And I think, well, okay, I mean, you can only lead a horse to water, but if they have no interest in their own personal survival, then, you know, like, I can't want something for someone more than he wants it for himself. So,
yes.
You know, I think they're going to be out of luck, and then they'll wonder why. They'll wonder what happened. And, yes, I do think it's our job. Now, here's what we have against us, of course, is a fraudulent education system.
Yes, of course.
Frauds.
Of course.
Talk about darling little active children to listen to this programming, this nonsense about, oh, good grief, it drives me crazy. I mean, you know, and then, of course, you have to say, what parent would do that to a child to you know, put him someplace where... Well, don't get me started on the education system. Pardon me, the school system. I don't have a problem with education. It's schooling. It's definitely just wrong for children. Anyway, so then, but here's the thing, you know, and I said to a friend, I said, you know, it's funny. My parents' generation missed the boat completely. Their parents saw the shift. Like, my grandparents must have seen the shift. They must have witnessed that there was something really wrong. For example, I had one of my grandfathers used to write an article in the Toronto paper way back in the 30s, and one of his bylines, he used to have a column, and one of his bylines was, "We are being governed and taxed to death." Well, when I saw that, I jumped out of my chair. I said, good God, it's in my DNA. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But the point was, he knew there was something wrong. And so did I, unbeknownst. But you see, my father or my parents' generation, they missed the whole thing. They didn't witness it going from real to unreal. And their parents didn't know enough to say, this is the way it used to be and look how bad it is now. Mm. So they kind of missed the whole thing, and they didn't live long enough to hear me say to them, look, this is you were the generation that was completely unconscious.
Mm.
At least my grandfather knew there was something wrong. But I'm not saying that my parents didn't have a glimpse of it. I'm just saying they were powerless. They were raised in the bad system, and they weren't powerful enough to do something about it. So my grandparents' generation knew there was something wrong, and here we are, two generations later, doing something about it, because we've gotten the message that we're it, and if we don't do something about it, we're all sunk.
Yes, yes. And hasn't it maybe something to do as well? It depends on, you know, the nature of the time that you're living in. If you're kind of in a happy state, so to speak, if your surrounding is good, you're having a good job, you have the money, you have kind of no reason to upset the system, right? Then you don't want to rock the boat in that position. But if you're under some kind of pressure or the system that you're in isn't providing for you, then you consequently begin to ask questions as well. So in a way, it's kind of good that these kind of minor little tragedies, if you will, that, you know, temporarily financial system is a bit low, but that spawns people to actually ask questions about the system itself and the nature of it. Isn't that right?
Perfect. You are right on. That's exactly it. let's face it, we all know wealthy people who say, well, I'm hardly going to do something about it. It's worked for me.
Yes.
But we know way more people who have been beaten up. I mean, I just said to a friend yesterday, I said, I don't even think I associate with anybody who hasn't been to jail.
Really?
Do you know what I mean? There's just so many people who have gotten into some trouble, some form of trouble from the alleged authorities. They're not authorities, but because it's spreading, they're so desperate, they're picking on people that, you know, 50 years ago, if you heard they were in trouble with the law, my God, this was unheard of.
Mm.
But now it's everybody.
Mm.
I mean, everybody knows somebody that's in trouble. So you're right. We could look at this as a blessing in disguise because that's what builds the fire under us, right, and makes us move.
Yeah.
Because how many of us would have continued to sit back? In fact, I get letters and emails all the time from people who say, you know, I was just going along, like everything was well, I guess it's good enough. And then suddenly, bam, I got hit with this. Well, now I'm taking a look at it. Well, this is actually good. I mean, I'm sorry that people are losing their houses and worse.
Of course.
Being locked up. But at least it's forcing people to say, okay, we got it. There's something wrong here. We
yes.
need to fix this. We need to take a look at it. Now, I will say this. Unfortunately, for the past dozen years or so, which is as long as I've been doing this, we've been fighting them. We've been saying, you can't do this to us. And, of course, that's absolutely the wrong way to tackle anything, never mind this. So, fortunately, somebody got it into his brain to say, maybe this is supposed to work for us. Maybe this has been designed to work for us. Let's take a look at that and see where that might be. Well, sure enough, he came up with, it's written in their laws. They're supposed to be working for us. We just got these rogue agents in there temporarily who shouldn't be there. They're just, you know, selfish, arrogant bastards. Oh, pardon me.
That's fine. You can say it.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, you know, who are essentially just taking advantage of a situation.
Yes.
And they're not serving their brothers. And that's going to come back and bite them. It really will. They're you know, they're going to be sorry someday that they've hurt their fellow man. Because you can't get away from that stuff, can you? So, anyway, the way to fix it is simply to say, do your job. And if you're not going to do your job, then I will file a commercial lien against you. And that will freeze everything. And that will make you do your job. So it's kind of, but you don't tell them, you just do it.
Sure.
Now, it's a bit of a process, filing this commercial lien. It's not that hard, but it's, you know, you kind of have to sort of know what you're doing. And most people don't.
How about lawyers? Is there any kind of people in regards to how this operates that you actually can go to and ask for this, or is that a bad idea to go to a lawyer or something like that?
Well, number one, lawyers don't know what we're doing.
Except okay,
for
right.
They've made the effort to find out.
Right.
They're completely in the dark. In other words, you think about people who have been misled. Holy jumping. So, so not only do they not know, if you go to them, because they're so dependent upon their position, like they've been so brainwashed, they'll defend their position right or wrong. So there's really no point in talking to them, right? So the other thing is, so if you hire an attorney to represent you, well, now you've just given away your sovereignty, right? Because you're not declaring that you're a man on the land and you can manage your own affairs.
Yes.
You're crying to somebody saying, will you help me? Well, that doesn't get you anywhere, does it? So,
yes.
I'd leave the attorneys out of it. They don't know. They're not going to help you.
Yes.
Unless you got one who's got an open mind, but I've never met one. Anyway.
So, I mean, let's see here. For people that are then interested to kind of in really following up this, and let's say that the listeners are in the U.S., they're in Canada, Australia, or even somewhere in Europe, in Scandinavia. What would you recommend the first thing to do? I guess go through your book, of course, and read that thoroughly. But then at that point, is there a website somewhere you can go in order to find out more about more the exact names of the documents, etc., you know, to get things going, to get started on this?
You know, I wish there were a very straightforward place to go. There's a whole lot on the internet about this, but it's confusing and complicated and convoluted because You know, I read a lot of stuff, and I think, well, he could have put that into one page, and I don't want to read 50.
Yes.
And there's audios, and there's all kinds of stuff. And the only thing, what I'm intending to do is, as I grasp better and better what's really going on, I intend to put my grasp of it on my blog. And even at that, if I come up with something that I think is particularly brilliant on my blog, I will, by that I mean if I find something that's brilliant, on my blog I will direct people to it. But I have this feeling that my job, because people write these documents and I read them, and first of all, they're too long, and second, they're badly written. And that annoys me because I think, well, now I don't know who you're talking about. Who's they? So it sort of bothers me. So as I come to an understanding about what this is really all about, I write an article about it and I post it. And not only does that help me understand what I'm doing, but I think it makes it easier for other people. Now, I'm not saying that I've written the best stuff out there. I'm just saying I think I'm good at making it succinct and well written, presuming that I grasp the concept accurately. But I wouldn't write anything unless I did. So if it's not there, it's because I don't get it. But
right.
I'm catching on, like, way, way, way better and faster because I'm sort of doing some of the research here.
Yes.
And even if that happens to be studying other people's stuff. But I just have to say, stuff because it's in funny places, it's convoluted, it's really long, it's hard to grasp, and it's kind of annoying. So I wish I could direct everybody someplace, like, go read this.
Yes.
But I can't. I can't. I can say, listen to Winston Schrout on Monday evening, but you see, now that's really late for you, because Monday evening is something like 7 o'clock my time, I think, so that's, you know, the middle of the night to you. So.
Yes.
But he's on truthradio.com. If you feel, I beg your pardon, I think he archives, or pardon me, the fellow who's on there archives
mm-hmm.
it.
Okay.
But what I've also found, though, is he's hard to hear on that, but that could just be my particular situation. But there's a lot of people talking about, you know, the best thing might be just to Google 1099 OID, and as long as you're clear, though, that you're not going to just a typical accounting website. You know, I did that myself once, and I got onto a page where somebody's trying to tell somebody how to file taxes, and it had nothing to do with what we were talking about. You know?
Right, right.
So it really just will take, just, you know, keep looking.
Yes.
And as I say, though, and this is not to promote my blog, I don't gain anything from my blog, there's no advertising or
anything. Well, if it's good information on there, then people need to go there and find out, and we want to have that as a resource as well, so go ahead and get it out there, you know.
Yeah, that's it, and so I will say that when I post something on my blog, it's because I've grasped the next concept, and I'm pretty clear on what we're up to, and I keep it reasonably short, like that most recent one was 5 pages, so...
Do you have any plans to kind of compile the information in some form, either in a book form or a short video or some kind of presentation? Any plans to that at all?
Well, I would. I mean, I did think of putting all the articles into a book, but then I figure, well, if they're already posted on the blog, then people can go back through and just take a look at them. And none of
them
are very long.
Sure.
And they're... A lot of them are thought-provoking. For example, how to handle, in other words, the biggest cause of the authority issue is the fact that we answer their questions. And we're not meant to answer their questions. They're the public servants. We're meant to answer theirs. So I wrote an entire article on that. And it's like when you get it through your skull, you go, oh, good grief. That's how I got myself into trouble, was I answered them. They don't have any authority over me, and they don't have any authority to ask me any questions. You know, what's your name? Who are you?
Yes.
Right? Same as we treat somebody we
don't want to
talk
to.
Yeah, like, why have we fallen for this? It's because we were raised with a lifetime of it. You know, the policeman is your friend.
Right.
Yeah, maybe 75 years ago, maybe. or maybe even 50 years ago, but not now.
Yeah.
They're out to collect. They're out to collect. They're revenue collectors.
Yes.
So, I wish I could direct you to something that's right on top, but it's all over the place. In other words, if you Google it, you'll find something. But
yes.
But stick with my blog too, which you've already said is, well, it's spiritualeconomicsnow.net, and I'll be writing it as I get it, like as I know.
Yes.
So,
very good. We'll have that linked up on our website again, of course, for people who want to dive into it further. And keep an eye on there, of course, as you do updates and so forth. But I think this is a good place to begin to round things up here for this time. But, you know, Mary, we'd love to have you back here further on if you have time for us and talk more about this and see what new comes up. And at that point, you might have, compile something more or have a more kind of, in presentation form to have some kind of a, crash course in this, because it's a big subject. It's kind of daunting to get into it just, from zero. At first, you don't understand anything of the official, system to begin with, but then you're trying to break it down and say that it's another way. It's a process of unlearning in a way, actually. So, but we'll definitely keep track on that. And again, I want to thank you very much for coming on the program. Is there anything else you'd like to kind of leave us with before we end here in this segment?
No, I can't think of anything other than to say that, yes, I grasp that it's... it is. It's like a head full to say, whoa, what? I got that. And there's sections. There's sections of understanding certain areas. But the truth is, it's a whole lot simpler now than it used to be. We were all over the map on this stuff, and now we've really, really snugged it up. And so anybody who's starting out learning this stuff now is actually going to have a much easier time of it than we ever did. In other words, it's gotten easier because we're now in the right direction and we're seeing it. We're witnessing results, so we're saying, aha, finally. And that's why, by the way, I would not go on any other radio show over the past, I'd say about a year or so, because I thought, I just don't have anything great to say. But when you contacted me, I said, okay, now we can get this out because we've made leaps and bounds on the information. So
yes.
The other thing is I thank you because this allows me to essentially educate those who might not otherwise hear it.
Yes.
I'm over here across the pond, and so I'm grateful that you caught this and want to tell your listeners about what's really going on. I appreciate that.
Yes, very good. Thank you again very much for coming on, and keep us posted, and of course keep up the good work, and we'll see how things progress along the line, okay?
Okay.
Finally, this video. Okay. So, the terminology breakdown. Okay. For those people who are out there asking about, well, what term is it that we're trying to claim? What is truly a U.S. national? Okay. National means you were born and loyal to the land underneath your feet. Okay. So, for some of these people who are like, I'm a nationalist, whatever, they can call themselves that. And they have their agendas, and some of them are pushing the whole white aspect of it. Well, I'm a patriotic nationalist, etc. It's not what we're saying here. Zip. So I did get those emails, comments, whatever. It's not what we're saying here. A true national is a person born here. It doesn't matter what color you are, and you're claiming this land to be yours by my birthright, okay? A U.S. national, you're saying that all the states who got together to form this more perfect union, okay, come together as a nation. That nation is what we operate underneath. So if one state is not doing it and one state's doing it, you have the ability to say, well, I'm operating underneath this, so if they're free, I'm free. If they can have guns, I can have guns. If they can do this, I can have it. So unless all of them veto having something or agree to doing something, that's where it kind of would then apply to you. Doesn't mean you're completely free. There's absolutely no rules and laws and regulations. Ooh, let's get crazy. It's the fact that you have the freedom of choice. You also have in there because that's what they're doing, is they're existing under these God-given rights, the freedom of happiness, pursuit of happiness, land rights, all these things, okay? Right, their own property, guns, whatever. Because most people can govern themselves accordingly and very professionally, you know. It's always for that 5% or whatever it is. I think it's actually less than that. But anyway, so when you then say, what is a non-U.S. national? Okay, so you're saying you're not.
As a secured party and creditor, can you buy a home, a car, and other items you need and want? The answer is yes, and there are documents you use to do just that. Catch my radio podcast at Blog Talk Radio. Go to TahakaDebtElimination.org. Fill out the box. As a secured party and creditor, can you buy a home, a car, and other items you need and want? The answer is yes, and there are documents you use to do just that. Catch my radio podcast at Blog Talk Radio. Go to TahakaDebtElimination.org. Fill out the box with your email address that says join our mailing list, and I will send you my free report. You got credit problems? Contact me at TahakaDebtElimination.org. Let's stay in honor and get into the private.
Finally, this video. Okay. So, the terminology breakdown. Okay, for those people who are out there asking about, well, what term is it that we're trying to claim? What is truly a U.S. national? Okay. National means you were born and loyal to the land underneath your feet. Okay, so for some of these people who are like, I'm a nationalist, whatever, they can call themselves that, and they have their agendas, and some of them are pushing the whole white aspect of it. Well, I'm a patriotic nationalist, etc. It's not what we're saying here. Zip. So I did get those emails, comments, whatever. It's not what we're saying here. A true national is a person born here. It doesn't matter what color you are, and you're claiming this land to be yours by my birthright, okay? A U.S. national, you're saying that all the states who got together to form this more perfect union, okay, come together as a nation. That nation is what we operate underneath. So if one state is not doing it and one state's doing it, you have the ability to say, well, I'm operating underneath this, so if they're free, I'm free. If they can have guns, I can have guns. If they can do this, I can have it. So unless all of them veto having something or agree to doing something, that's where it kind of would then apply to you. Doesn't mean you're completely free. There's absolutely no rules and laws and regulations. Ooh, let's get crazy. It's the fact that you have the freedom of choice. You also have in there, because that's what they're doing, is they're existing under these God-given rights, the freedom of happiness, pursuit of happiness, land rights, all these things, okay? Right, their own property, guns, whatever. Because most people can govern themselves accordingly and very professionally, you know. It's always for that 5% or whatever it is. I think it's actually less than that. But anyway, so when you then say, what is a non-U.S. national? Okay, so you're saying you're not from the U.S., okay, but you're a national. So what, and this is in their words, okay, so that's what I go by. I have to go by their words, break it down, and give it to you guys in this kind of way, because we can call ourselves state citizens and nationals all we want, but what does it matter if we don't know what they're doing. Because what they're doing, and when you try to apply for your passport card, and how you apply for it, you're like, I'm just a state citizen. And they're going to be like, there's no such thing. Because they basically elevated state citizen to what it is, really, is a U.S. national. That's what they call it. You're a national. And a lot of people out there are like, well, I don't like the fact that you use the word U.S. national because that's a corporation. I know these things. Okay, that's why I kind of made the channel. But I use those terms because you need to get familiar with those, but know in our world, in our, on our behalf, what it really is. They're saying state citizen. They're saying American who's sovereign. They're saying a sovereign person who lives in America, okay? Saying you're a national. You're an American national, okay? We know this is the, all those words into U.S. national. So a non-U.S. national typically, by their definition, would be somebody who's born in, like, Washington, D.C., the Virgin Islands, Guam, at one point in time, Philippines, Guam, stuff like that, okay? Places where they have their territories that they own. So those are non-U.S., but they're nationals to those lands, okay? Whereas in their lands, they would just be called a national. Kind of like here, we call them Brazilian nuts, but in Brazil, they just call them nuts, or these nuts. Anyway, she's a very nice lady who makes nuts, old lady, something like that. I'm sticking with it. All right, so all right, so what else is there? So that's the different definitions between national, U.S. national, and then non-U.S. national. Okay, of course, we all know what U.S. citizen is. That's really the breakdown of what the terminology is and why I use it, is just because I'm utilizing their words, because if you spout down their information or our information and say, hey, I'm a state citizen, I'm whatever else, we know what it is. We provide that information in there just so they can't rebuttal anything, but we have to convert it from their words, our words to their words, so that once they file that information in your passport or any other document or information that you provide, because they know what it is. Their upper channels already know what it is. Some of the low-level functionaries may not know what it is, but that's why you want to address it to somebody of higher importance who will then take that information and go, oh, okay, look that way, and then they put it in there for you, whatever else, because they know what it is. And if they're not educated, then we're going to educate these low-level functionaries for those who have an open mind. Some of them don't, and some of them are just going to be on some bullshit because that's what they do. That's what I'm saying. When you get the explanatory statement from me or whatever, this is what helps you to kind of cut through that, because if you just send it in, you don't know who you're going to get. So you want to be specific, like you're talking to somebody who doesn't comprehend things real well, because you don't know who you're going to get. You can get that good guy at the job, or you can get that one guy who don't know, and you're like, how did he get that job, okay? So that's kind of the breakdown. So what is a U.S. national? It's a person who belongs to all of the, or by legal definition, the several states of the nation, okay? So that in itself is a invisible gang or group or membership. Then you've got U.S. citizens who are in their gang, group, membership, okay? All living invisible. That's also why on the passport it also says, you know, all this I declare to be true under penalty of perjury, blah, 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 that I am a U.S. citizen or a non-U.S. national, because you can be here and have these benefits and privileges as that. It's another gang, invisible group thing going on. So where is your citizenship status is what it's all about. And yes, you can exist in multiple ones, all of them to a degree, and when you're in certain situations, whoever you're dealing with is going to say, are you this? Okay, I have jurisdiction over you, and this is how it goes. Here's that ticket. Here's that whatever. That's how it works. But if they don't have jurisdiction over you, they don't have jurisdiction over you. That's just how it works. All right, so that's about it, guys. The Bad Wolf's over and out. Drops a lot of knowledges on you. Don't forget to check out all the files for sale down below, the offer. What's up, friends, family, fellow wolves? Okay, so these next couple videos are kind of based off of people's questions that keep popping up. This one's going to be kind of like titled, Where Do I Start? Or How Do I Start to Become a U.S. National? How did this all begin and all that good stuff? So if you're watching this for the first time, good for you. You have begun the path of waking up within the Matrix. I, your host, your herald of this information, am Morpheus. No, I'm just kidding. Do you think that's air you're breathing now? Where to start? People are like, where do I start? Okay, I always tell them, especially when I do consultations, and all these people can vouch for me, there's really no first perfect place to start any of this process. People are like, should I do my UCC? Should I get my passport? Should I file revocation? Look, it's going to be different for everybody. It just depends on what you need and where you are in your life. But in the very shortest way I can say this, it starts with you and your brain, your mind, okay? You waking up and saying, I need to research this information. What is this guy talking about? What are these other people talking about? I've never heard this before. There's only, you know, I've got good friends who I've gotten in arguments with, and they don't even know, like some younger and some older, and they're like, what are you talking about? I'm just a U.S. citizen or national. You sound like one of those American sovereign people, and you're crazy, la, 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 la. Until they start seeing that I'm living in the private, you know, and I'm not dealing with nearly the same kind of stress levels and whatever else. Doesn't mean, you still don't get bothered. You still don't get the occasional letter, you know, from these people, but that's fine. And I send them an even stronger, more powerful letter back, and then it goes away because of jurisdiction. That's where all this really starts. But a lot of people don't understand jurisdiction. That is the line in the sand. Which team are you on, okay? Like a lot of people think that everyone plays for the Packers and the, you know, Dallas Cowboys. Like it's just, you know, no one sees color and they're just all walking around together. Well, the problem is you separate those two different teams and you see that there are U.S. nationals and then you see that there are nationals and then you see that there are U.S. citizens, okay? Everyone's doing the same thing, and then some of them are both. Matter of fact, majority of people are a little bit from both teams, okay? But you by birthright were born a U.S. national. And the reason why I use that term is because the Department of State currently uses that. Yes, they change the terms every so often and whatever else. That's to confuse people. The word U.S. national is synonymous with national, which is also synonymous with non-resident alien, which is what the IRS uses. Now, if you don't believe me, look up these terms. That's all you have to do. Especially non-resident alien with the IRS. That means somebody who's foreign to the United States, which is the corporation, the nation, the private nation, which is foreign, is different than the United States of America, the Republic. Okay? Look up the definition of the United States. There's like 5 or 6, 7 different definitions of it by law. Okay? So when the trolls out there are like, this, that, and the other, it's clearly because you guys just want to sit around and bother somebody, which, by the way, I delete your messages, so I never see them. Like, if I even starts to sound like it's rubbish, I delete it, okay? So, but by law, there's every word has a definition to it, an official meaning, just like you can look up the word driver in Black Law's Dictionary, and it's going to tell you that it's for commerce, okay, commercial, for profit. All I'm saying is take one piece and start unraveling it, okay? Because once you see that there are all these, you think you know the meaning of some of these words until you look up their definition, okay? Then all of a sudden, it means something. Look up the term jurisdiction, okay? You can't be charged in one jurisdiction and defend in another, okay? So if I'm over here in this jurisdiction, and they're trying to say, we want you to come over here because we want to give you a ticket or whatever else. Sorry, I'm over in this jurisdiction. The only way that you can bounce back to the other one is if I give them permission, which is what everybody does when you sign tickets and whatever else, or you have to harm somebody who's a U.S. citizen, do damage to their property, or deprive them of their rights. That is it. Okay? So I'm not mad at people who don't understand jurisdiction. It is what it is. It's probably not for you. Then stay in your cage. Well, the rest of us who want to roam free will do what we want to do. All right? So you're born a U.S. national, through the birth certificate process, and that it's an application to become a U.S. citizen. Once you understand that, then you can slowly start to unravel all the rest of it. That your all capitalized name is a corporation, it's a trust, it's a dead entity, artificial person. The term person means artificial entity. But where do you start? So once you get that in your brain, you've started. That's the beginning. What do you need to do from there? I personally recommend getting your passport done as a U.S. national, okay? And for those people who don't know, once you have the process done, you can either do it yourself, you can do use my methods, you can use other people else's methods out there. But the key to that is having an explanatory statement declaring yourself as a U.S. national, which you already are. You're just letting them know that I want a passport done that way. Also, for people who don't know, they've been hiding that they're getting rid of like the stars in the books. They're getting rid of like the special annotation page. They're not getting rid of it, but they're not marking it down in there. That it's all being digitally encoded into the chip. Okay, the numbers will change and things like that because it's a different status. All right, but the problem is that like people are going through the process and they're like, well, did I get it? Did I not get it? If they don't deny you from through your paperwork, okay, and you submit that in there, then it's been accepted, okay, encoded, because by law they have to have that information with the file, okay, for reference. Because in the future, if you go to court and for some dumb reason you happen to go to court, because obviously you haven't, you know, bought my package on the best letter you can send them for normal things, like nothing criminal, okay, but look down below, it's called like the chief of police cop letter. There's two different types, but you want the one that starts off with the chief. You're going to end up subject to their laws and going through the normal tickets and whatever else. But as a U.S. national, a lot of them are actually foreign. But if you are operating your vehicle, you're driving your vehicle, and you've given them jurisdiction, okay? So this is that, what I'm talking about is more so for people who are U.S. nationals. As a U.S. citizen, you can still contest them, you know, obviously by doing the UCC 1-308 within 3 days of receiving it, your ticket, and sending it back to them as soon as possible. But the letter I send after that is what shuts 90% of that down, if not 95% of it, because you're making them prove jurisdiction, and then you're asking them for some very uncomfortable documents that proves that they're a foreign operating entity, and you are informing them that you are a U.S. national. So anyway, I digress. Back to the passport. So if they've accepted the passport application, it's part of the file, and that's how they have to process you, as long as you fill out the application correctly and you include the explanatory statement. You're going to try to avoid all of their traps, and the explanatory statement supersedes a lot of the information, but if you do commonly stupid things like use zip codes or put in all zeros for your social, things of that nature, you could be pulled into their jurisdiction. Even the all zeros thing, that could be considered fraud by them, and they can go after you. So do your research. I've got a number of videos made on that and some of the questions. Go back through all those. Look for other, YouTube people who've also done it as well. If you want, follow the process. And that's where I would start. And the reason why is because then you have a card. Once the federal government, Department of State, which is the big boy on the block, has declared you as a U.S. national by sending you that card, whether they put it on there or not, like I said, it's all encoded now, the card still has asterisks or stars on it, but still yet to this day, no one 100% knows what all of them typically mean, but you want at least three. Three is the middle ground. That means that, you know, you're living in both worlds, as a U.S. national and a national, which is not bad. And then, obviously, so three, four, or five, you know, are the better ways, but very few people get five, and soon enough they're going to be removing those even from the card. So, but getting the card means now you're allowed still to go into all the federal areas. You can prove yourself, your ID, you know, anywhere you need it, okay? People can travel with it, but before you start just traveling in your personal conveyance or your automobile, make sure that you watch the videos on how to do that properly, how to remove yourself from the jurisdiction, and there's little things like you have to make sure that, you know, your car is paid off, okay? Because if it's not paid off, it's registered to the state, and you're underneath their jurisdiction, all right? So that's a no-no. So from there, it just depends. You can then file a UCC, you can do a revocation. Almost anything else from there up is totally up to you. You can do all of it, you can do none of it. You can exist all the way into private, all the way into public, a little bit of both. One day, I can walk out and be like, I'm 100% in the private. But then all of a sudden I go and open an account for something, and at that point in time, I'm 5%, you know, in the public. You know what I mean? So it's up to you. So that's about it, guys. One last tidbit, though. If you do try to distance yourself from the public side, make sure you either don't or rarely use your social, because when you use that number, you're re-upping your citizenship status with them, okay? It never really times out, but if they ever pull you into court or try to verify that you are a U.S. citizen and they keep seeing you using it, bang, 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 just apply for a new card, just apply for this, you're utilizing the benefit. The more you continue to utilize the benefit, the more they can stick it to you, okay? So I would recommend using an ITIN number, Individual Taxpayer Identification Number, and you can get that from, you know, Department of Revenue. So there you go. That's about it, guys. Take care. Stay wise. Stay smart. You too. It's your boy back at it again. So dropping that knowledge on you knowledge seekers. All right. So you're checking in because you like the title, which should say, how do I declare my U.S. national or state citizenship without a passport? Okay. Now, I addressed some of this in a previous video. I didn't go into all of the entirety, which I'm going to do here. But when you're born, you are a national. Okay. You don't need the passport to declare that you're a national. You are a state citizen of the state that you were born there in. But, so when your parents get you your social security number, start, you know, telling you got to get a job and paying taxes and all those other things, these are all contracts, whether they're verbal, nonverbal, or situational, whatever, that have either declared you a 14th Amendment citizen and basically contracted you under subcontract, for you to be a part of their system or a federal citizen. So let's get right down to it. The easiest way to declare yourself that without anything major, the simplest, easiest legal way to do this, and this is not legal advice, just education, is to write your own statement saying, I, whatever your name is, declare myself to be a state citizen of your state. I declare all this, you know, under penalty of perjury and whatever, that I was born in this state. I am a living being by this exact spelling of my name with your capital initial and then all lowercase lettering for your entire name, and not to be associated or misconstrued as a non-living being or entity or a corporate entity such as, and then put your name in all capital letters, but then put that you are the authorized agent thereof, but assume no liability, okay? Then you're going to want to take that, and if you have any specific, like, religion or whatever else, add that in there. If you want to add whatever else comes to mind, like, you know, all this before, you know, the God of Abraham or, you know, anything like that, you want to say all that kind of stuff and then put in there that I am not, you know, a 14th Amendment citizen. I'm not a federal employee. Nothing but a United States of America, republic, born in the 50 states of the United States of America, living being or soul, you know, something like that. However you want to phrase it is fine. You get that all put up, typed up on your computer, printed on paper, and then what you're going to want to do is take that, and if you have a friend who's willing to do that, do this either to or just to witness this, have them come with you to a bank or down to your city hall to get it registered with the city, but get it notarized, and have them available, your friend, with their ID as well, proving that they are who they say they are, and have a space in there for your friend to sign. And if you can have two people, one is good, two is great, three is even better, but at least you, your friend, and then the notary, that's three people, that's all you need to declare it. So, but some people are like, well, why do you need a passport? You know, why do you have these passports, you know, saying that, you know, declaring yourself as a U.S. national, a national, or a state citizen? The reason why is because for those of us who have gone further down the rabbit hole, if you will, it's because when you declare it through your passport, it adds bite to it because you're declaring it to a multi-billion dollar agency, to the government, and their various parties, everything associated with your Social Security numbers and such information. Now, when you do that, it's the same as declaring it on your own, just with a notary, without having to do it to the passport. But with this, it's important because they're going to issue that information into the card. Okay, you can print your own card and do it that way. But if you're going to travel in your personal conveyance, as some of us do, problem comes in at is they're not going to recognize your homemade ID and your rights thereof. They should, but most cops, unfortunately, some of them are good, some of them are, you know, but they don't, some of them don't know these rules and laws outside of their system. The only thing that they can identify with is that passport, okay, or your driver's license or your state ID. Typically, if you have a state ID, they know that you don't have a driver's license. And on the state ID, it says not a driver's license because for some reason, you can't have both. What the exact reasoning is, I don't know, but some of your states will allow it, but apparently you can't mix those two different systems. So one must be on the living side, one must be on the, you know, corporate side or between the state and federal. You can't have two of these conflicting things, at least here in Wisconsin. So you have to check and see what your state is. Now, some people were asking, why is there, you know, how does that work with rights and stuff? Well, you've always been a national. You just became also a 14th Amendment citizen unknowingly, okay? So depending on what crime or thing you've done, that's why you get put in certain different courts, okay, in front of a magistrate or judge, if you will, so-called. Supreme Court is really the only place where there's an actual real judge. Who could actually really sentence you and things of that nature. But that's for another video. So it would be kind of like, how does this work? If I or somebody, anybody were to join like, you know, another nation, Moor Nation, Islam Nation, whatever, as a citizen, you have your American rights in America. If you're in any area that's considered their jurisdiction, then you have those rights that are involved in their nation. American rights are not going to play a factor in their nation, and their nation laws are not going to play a factor here. Though a lot of them, if they see you, it's kind of like you're visually within, become in the bubble of their territory, and you might have to conduct yourself a certain way. But the two different laws or laws of each nation, you have to abide by as such when in such, okay? So that is really how to do it. Who can do it? Well, basically, if you can become considered a legal citizen of your city or your state, rather, you probably can become a state citizen. you might have to take an oath or a pledge or whatever else, or sign a document saying that, you know, basically like we said, how to do a declaration without a passport. If you could do that to your state and have them notarize it, you might have to go in front of like a city official and do that. That would possibly be one loophole way around it. And then you can then apply for a passport and become a state citizen, you know, officially recognized. That might be a loophole, because I know that some, I made one video stating that people from other countries can't really become a state citizen because they weren't born here. But I probably, if you're here with enough time, you have to see how your city and state does it. Each one might be different, or find a place that is willing to accept you to do that, and you take the oath, then you could become classified as a citizen of that state. And once that's done, then you could probably apply for a passport and say that, you know. But when they ask on the question where you were born, you still have to put your original country, so they may not allow for that. I don't know for sure. I have not done that. I know one guy who said he was from another country, lived in Florida long enough, and became a state citizen of Florida. And he was going to apply for a passport. So I think he said no. He said he did, but he got it as a – this wasn't for me. He got it as a 3-star non-U.S. national. So he did at least make it that far in that aspect. Now, as far as whether, you know, he could ever get 4 or 5, if you even want to believe in such, don't know. But anyway, back to the original. That's how you would declare yourself a national or a state citizen outside of doing it the passport way. In any place, you can put this out in the open so it becomes part of the public record. Goes a long way to help your case. But for me, that's the kind of the grassroots way. I wanted something a little bit more concrete, as do most people. I want it certified so that it's undisputed, especially as a traveler. So I would recommend correcting it via the passport in that particular way. So that's about it, guys. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate each and every one of you. Appreciate the donations. Appreciate the subscriptions. Don't forget to hit that bell, like, subscribe on the way out.
Hello, everybody. I want to introduce you to The Great Debate by Dr. Walter Williams. He single-handedly laid out the facts in this powerful debate against Mr. Munir Muhammad of the Nation of Islam, Chester Blair, a prominent lawyer in Chicago, Illinois, and Reverend Henry Harvey, a prominent minister in Chicago, and Prince Aziel ben Israel of the Hebrew Israelites. This debate was hosted by a retired policeman named W.L. Lillard. Now, the whole thing was a setup by Lillard and his gang, but it didn't work. They brought what they believed to the table, but Dr. Walter Williams brought what he knew for a fact and what he could prove and laid it on the table. We are now in the age of knowing. The age of walking around believing this stuff is over. For your copy of The Great Debate, go to TahakaDataElimination.org. That's TahakaDataElimination.org, or contact me by phone. My number's on the website. Oh, and by the way, the lawyer got bust up too. The Great Debate, get your copy today. Good day and peace.
All right, guys, I'm going to be talking a little bit about the process of becoming an American state national. I think it's imperative and important to understand all the ins and outs of it. I've gotten a lot of questions about it via my TikTok channel, which is Real Self-Empowerment on TikTok. This is obviously my YouTube channel, and it's going to be posted on my YouTube channel. This video is for family, friends, and anyone who is interested in learning about how to be an American and how to stand up for your rights, how to understand the world around us. Obviously, there's a lot of issues and problems. Everyone's complaining about the government. We know that there's so much wrong with what's going on, and we want to be able to do something about it. And my encouragement to you is to learn this stuff. If you want to be a part of the solution, if you want to be solution-oriented, if you want to gain and your power back as a sovereign person and as a free person, then this is for you. So without further ado, it's going to be a lot, but we're going to get right into it. So the process is very simple. So you have three jobs. The first thing is to understand this, that you have been misidentified as a federal citizen. You've been kidnapped. We have been kidnapped. We've been misidentified by our own employees. One of three federal citizenship statuses are possible for you. The quickest, simplest, and easiest way out of this is to declare an act of expatriation, that you are not a citizen, a federal citizen of any kind. You're not a federal, territorial, or municipal citizen of the United States. And you need a competent act of expatriation signed, sealed, and witnessed by your state. Job number two, you will need to formally and specifically acknowledge, accept, and reconvey your given trade name. And this is the name that your parents gave to you as a gift. This is the name that was taken, it was seized upon, and it was used to create other variations and permutations and styles of names that have been attributed to you. So you have to say, yes, this is my property. I acknowledge it and accept it as my property, and I reconvey it from any presumed location at sea back to its natural and permanent domicile on the land and soil of whatever state it is that you were born in, whether it be California or New York, Wisconsin, Ohio. And then we take control of our assumed name. And to go back to job number two, this is essentially, we want to repatriate our trade name to its correct status. There are three jurisdictions that you should know and be aware of. You have the jurisdiction on the land and soil, you have the jurisdiction on the sea, and you have the jurisdiction in the air. We're not going to talk about the air right now because it's unimportant to us at this moment. But we will be talking about the jurisdiction of the sea and the jurisdiction of the land. The jurisdiction of the land, on this land, you are owed the law, which is common law. The law of the land is common law. On the sea, the law of the sea is maritime law or admiralty law. I'm not going to go as deep into that right now, but we need to understand that there are three jurisdictions. Your job three is to take control of all of the assumed names. And I know this sounds very heady right now, but I promise you, as we go along, you will understand a little bit more about the history, about why I'm saying these things. Your job three is to take control of all assumed names that have been ascribed to you based upon your trade name, the name that was given to you by your mother and father as a gift, as well as any pen names or performance names or any married names that you have. These three steps need to be done, and they need to be recorded. Expatriation, repatriation, and then the certificate of assumed names. They need to be done. They need to be established on international land record via your recording office. We want to record. We do not want to register. To register means to give your possessions to someone else to basically own or part own your property. We don't want to register. We want to record. When we are able to execute and record these actions, the expatriation, the repatriation, and the certificate of assumed names, and the declaration of permanent domicile, this reverses the process used to unlawfully convert our political status and our ownership interests. You thought you were just a debtor. You thought that you just were going to be a slave and live in depravity your whole life. But I'm sharing with you today that that is not the way it is. I'm sharing with you today that you can be sovereign and be free, not only in your internal being as a spiritual person, but also in this body of flesh and blood, and also in commercial dealings. You are not poor. You can stop the cycles of poverty, of a poverty's mindset, when you start to understand these things. I'm going to give you a little bit more explanation, because you're probably asking yourself, why should my political status matter? And I'm going to tell you this right now. Your political status, if you search it up on Black's Law Dictionary on online, what's going to come up is this word, self-determination. And I'm going to read you this definition, which is very important. Self-definition is the fundamental right of every person to freely decide on their own political status and to pursue their own choice of economic, cultural, and social development. It is embodied in the Declaration of Independence. Now that is an incredible thing. You can declare for yourself your own choice of economic, cultural, and social development. And political status is important because it ties into nationality. And so right now we're going to talk a little bit about nationality. Have you ever asked yourself, what is your nationality? Who are you? Well, let's talk about it. What is nationality? According to Black's Law Dictionary, it says that nationality is that quality or character which arises from the fact of a person belonging to a nation or a state. Now, this is important to hear. Nationality determines the political status of the individual. Your nationality determines your political status. So if you want a political status in which you are suppressed, in which you are subservient, if you want a political status in which you are lesser than, in which you do not possess constitutional rights, in which you are a debtor and a debt slave, then you need to understand what your political status is. Nationality determines the political status of an individual, especially with reference to allegiance. So you see what's going on in government right now. You see what's happening at the United States. You see what's happening with Joe Biden. And you're asking yourself, man, have I sworn allegiance to this guy? Is that the government that I am being represented by? And most of you will come to this fact and you will say, no, this is not the true government that I want to be represented by. I would say probably 99% of people in this world do not want war. We don't want poverty. We don't want suppression. We don't want police states. We don't want people telling us what to do, how to do, where to do, how to think. We don't want that. So, It refers also to allegiance. And your domicile, that is your permanent residence, determines your civil status. Now, how do we get nationality? Well, your nationality arises by two things, either by birth or naturalization. So you were either born in a place or you were naturalized. It means you become a part of your foreign person, becoming a part of. Now, nationality can be applied according to the country, that is to say the land that you were born in. Citizenship is the legal status when you are registered with the government of some country. Notice that word registered. In registration, you are basically co-owning or partially, it's almost like you're giving partial ownership to whatever it is that you are registering. Okay? We don't want to register. We don't want to be registered. We want to record. Nationality can also be an inheritance from one's parents. So if a child is born to Americans living overseas, he's still going to be an American, right? But one only becomes a citizen of a country via the adoption of a specific political status. So once you have taken on a political status, once you've registered yourself, because citizenship is a legal status that takes place by being registered. Once you register, then you have changed your political status. And you can only become a citizen of a country via the adoption of a specific political status. Okay? You cannot change your nationality. Where you were born is where you were born. That is part of your culture, your DNA, whatever it is. But you can change your citizenship. In effect, you can change your political status. Now, some of you guys are asking me, Nishan, that's great. A lot of good information. Why does this matter? It matters because every American born on the land of one of the American states or born to parents or grandparents who were is naturally an American state national. That is your political status. You are not naturally a citizen of the United States. No one is naturally a citizen until they are registered to become that citizen. Now, you're asking yourself, but I'm pretty sure I'm a citizen of the United States. Okay. Well, how is that possible? How did that happen? At the hospital, someone came to your mother, someone she trusted. They told her that it was a law. It was by law that she has to sign some specific and certain papers in order to register her child. And her mom did the same. It was her mom did the same thing with her, and her mom same thing with her. Unbeknown to your mom and my mom, those papers registered her baby, you and me, as citizens of the United States. Now, we don't know what that means yet, but we will understand what that means here in a second. Now, that baby, you and I, we were seized upon as a surety to back the debts of a corporation called the United States of America Incorporated. There is also another corporation called the United States Incorporated. Two different corporations, very similar names. These are corporate entities, no different than McDonald's. They have copyrighted our given name, and you as a baby were identified as chattel property belonging to these private, mostly foreign-owned corporations. Let that settle in you for a second. Now you're asking me this question, or you might be asking me this question. What's wrong with being a citizen of the United States? Well, There isn't just one definition of the United States. There are approximately four working definitions of the United States. I'm going to give them to you right now, and then you'll know for yourself. The first one is the continental United States. The definition of the continental United States is 50 organic states, geographic boundaries, belonging to free, independent, sovereign people of the United States. Now these states are called California, New York, Wisconsin, Ohio, Florida. Next, you have federal United States. This is another definition. This is 50 unincorporated, politically defined states. Not geographically defined states, but they are politically defined states. The continental states is 50 organic states, geographically defined boundaries. The federal United States is 50 unincorporated, politically defined states. They are called California State, Ohio State, New York State, Florida State. In order to claim back the government that we truly want, the government that is held accountable, people like me and you must participate in our local county, state, and jural assemblies. We must act as deputies for the locally elected land, jurisdiction, sheriffs, and join state militias. People on land, which is American state nationals, which every single one of you guys is naturally an American state national by being born in your state, whatever state that might be. People on the land operate in truth, justice, equality, and in peace. Then we have the territorial United States. The territorial United States is where the corporation starts. It is comprised of 57 state franchises. 50 state of states called the state of California, the state of New York, the state of Florida, and 7 insular states, Puerto Rico, Guam, the Virgin Islands, etc. Now, the territorial United States took your trade name, the name that was given to you by your parents. It was stolen to create a foreign situs trust. And it was stolen without your knowledge or your consent. The territorial United States created a foreign situs trust without your knowledge or consent using your trade name. That trade name will look like your first name, middle initial, and your last name. It could be in all capital letters, and it could be upper and lowercase letters. That is a foreign situs. The United States of America, the territorial United States operates as the United States of America Incorporated. They are currently in Chapter 7 bankruptcy, and they took your trade name, created a trust account, and created a trust account in your name that you did not know about and that you did not consent to. Lastly, we have the municipal United States, comprised of over 10,000 incorporated franchises operating as municipal oligarchies. An oligarchy is where a group of people essentially run the town. It's just a group of people. It's not a republic. These are called the state of, the city of, the town of, the township of, the borough of, in all capital letters. Anytime you see all capital letters, it is generally referring to the Municipal United States Franchise. How and what is their role? The birth certificate that was signed by your mother created the municipal citizen. That birth certificate registered you as a municipal citizen of the United States, in all capital letters. The United States is a corporation. That birth certificate was signed by your mother, and it created a municipal citizen of the United States. It is seen as, in all capital letters, first name, middle name, last name. This is a corporate legal fiction. And this corporate legal fiction was provided with a cess estate trust. It's a French word. A cess estate via estate trust. It was given that by the Department of Commerce. It was then removed to Puerto Rico for safekeeping. The Municipal United States operates as the United States, all capital letters, Incorporated. Now you guys have a little bit of background. All of this has happened without your knowledge. All this has happened without your consent. You thought that being a United States citizen was the greatest thing in the world. They made us stand up in school and pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And they've lied to us because they have been undermining this very government that we are owed. They have undermined the very freedoms that we have been owed. We are owed common law, which is under common law. It is the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Do not infringe upon the rights, liberty, or property of another being, another living being. And as long as you do that, you have committed no crime, and you can go about your way. This is common law. So again, we're going to go back to those three steps that we had talked about. Now that you understand this, now, so the act of expatriation, what is the act of expatriation? It explicitly renounces the territorial and municipal citizenships and returns those derivative names and accounts back to the land and soil, so that they're no longer out on the sea in maritime and admiralty law, but they are now back on the land and the soil. The certificate of assumed names seizes upon all of the derivative names and returns them to the control of you. You get back control of the name, of your rightful name, that trade name that they've been using in your name, you are the beneficiary of. It's time to lay hold of our names and anything that is attached to those names, including the trusts. The basis of expatriation from the United States citizenship is the Expatriation Act of 1868. There are three constitutions. You have the 1787 Constitution for the United States of America. You have the 1789 Constitution of the United States of America. And then you have the 1790 Constitution. The first one is the Federal Constitution. The second one is the Territorial Constitution. The third one is the Municipal Constitution. We'll have to do another one on the Constitution at some other point. All right, so the basis for the expatriation from the United States citizenship is the Expatriation Act of 1868. This Expatriation Act of 1868 specifically rejects the idea of lifetime, obligatory, allegiance to any government and overthrows that foundation, stone of feudalism. We expatriate from any presumed British, territorial, United States citizenship via the Expatriation Act of 1868. It is necessary to expatriate from both forms of United States citizenship, both territorial and municipal. So, now that we have exercised our remedy available under the Expatriation Act of 1868, and once we have declared that we are not United States citizens and are not citizens of the United States, see that? See the difference there? One is territorial, one is municipal. We are not United States citizens. We are not citizens of the United States. Once we've established that, we are not. Next, we must establish what we actually are. Because we were presumed to be something. We were presumed to be United States citizens. And then we were presumed to be municipal citizens of the United States as well. We have to further define your political status. And that is when you declare for yourself, you make a self-determination what your political status is on the public record and repatriate to the land and soil back where you belong, where you were naturally born, where your rights are intact, where you have constitutional rights, where you have private rights, where you're no longer a public servant or a federal citizen or a federal employee without your consent, and you go back to that and you repatriate back to land and soil where you were born. So if you were born in California, you are Californian. I was born in California. I'm a Californian. And that is the state of the union. I go back to the land and soil. I live in Tennessee. It's not like you have to go back to that state, but that's where I live, in land and soil. We have to patriate two times. Once from the territorial status and once from the municipal status. And we have to repatriate just once back to your natural birthright political status as an American state national and an American state citizen, which is great. We accomplish this by recording the act of expatriation, referencing your legal person, your first name, your middle name, your last name, leaving the territorial United States. Remember, we have lawful persons and legal persons. They look exactly the same. The lawful person is, you know, the flesh and blood human sentient being. That is a lawful person. The legal person exists only on paper. And they look exactly the same. And we have to designate that and make sure that that's clear. So we leave the territorial United States and our commercial persons also. We have to expatriate those commercial persons too. And that has to do with working in commerce. At some point in time, we'll talk about a little bit more about commerce and trust law. So our commercial persons, we take those. We expatriate from all presumptions of municipal citizenship, and all of these are repatriated to the land and soil, your natural birthright, wherever you were born. This one declares both the permanent domicile of your names. These are your vessels. You got to think about it as like ships. When ships went to go do commerce, they would have names on them. Imagine if you had 5 or 6 different names, but you weren't on them and you weren't controlling them, but they were doing business in your name, right? That's what we're doing. We're going to bring all those back, and we're to where you have control back on the land and soil of all those vessels. Those vessels in trade. So this one declares your permanent domicile of your name and your allegiance to the land and soil of your actual birth state. And you want to swear allegiance to, you don't have to swear anything, but you want to have allegiance to that land and soil, okay? Because on the land and soil, there is righteousness, there's goodness, there's common law, there's protection, there is justice on the land and soil. All right. So, the certificate of assumed names, seizes upon the derivative names, any other ways, shapes, and forms that your name might be had in, and returns them back to you. Your control. You control it. We use the certificate of assumed names recorded on the international land jurisdiction to establish our ownership interest and control, and to declare permanent domicile of these legal persons and these municipal persons on the land and soil. So what are we doing? We are lawfully converting everything back to our control and placing everything in its proper political status. We are reclaiming our lawful persons and enabling ourselves to act with the capacity of one of the people of our state. So no more complaining about the government, what's going on in the world. You want to be a part of the solution? Then you get back on the land and you start building up your government, your lawful government, from the county up. You start participating in your county. You start participating in making a difference in the world. Otherwise, you can continue to be part of the problem. These constitutional guarantees that we are owed once you get back on land, and it forces the hired help, these government service agencies, including the courts, to honor the law of the land owed to the people and to the states of the land. We do not repudiate and we do not renounce our citizenship. We expatriate specifically from territorial and the municipal United States citizenships that have been conferred upon us, and we establish our permanent home and domicile upon the land and the soil of our birth instead. After we do this, we will go into step two, which is essentially to retire from any presumption of federal employment, and we get rid of any voter registration. And we do this by notifying the state voter registration office and getting your name removed. You send them a letter. Once you realize that what they are doing is operating a foreign corporation on your soil, and you are offering your enfranchisement voting rights in exchange for your natural right to elect your own public officials and conduct your own government and live under your own law, you should have no regrets about not being a voter. They make you feel bad. And so we have to notify the voter registration office that we're no longer voters. We elect our public officials, and we conduct our own government the way that we want to conduct it, according to our laws. Then the next thing we do is we notify the Social Security Administration that we have retired from all federal employment and have returned to our native birthright political status as American state national and as a state citizen. If they have any objections, if they have any claims, if they have any objections or claims, we give them 5 business days to reply and tell them that if we do not hear from them in that time, that we will accept their agreement that all insurances, services, and benefits of the Social Security program are due and owing to us, regardless of political affiliation or the lack thereof, and that we are free to receive any pensions and any other program services without prejudice, presumption, or claim otherwise. As a part of step 3, we are free to revoke our election to pay federal income taxes, so long as you are not an actual federal civilian, that is living within the 10 square miles of DC, a military employee, a dependent, a political asylum seeker, or otherwise prohibited from relinquishing this particular duty. If you work for the corporation, you got to do what the corporation says. The United States is not a government. Okay, these are not our governments, guys. Joe Biden is not the president of our government. These are government service agencies, no different than a franchise or any other type of corporation. I hope you guys got something out of this. I know it's a little bit difficult to make sense of, but This is, I'm doing my best to convey to you why this is important, that you be a part of this. You can continue to complain and cry and worry about what's going on out there in the world, or you can be a part of the solution and get back on the land and soil, rebuild our true and rightful government, be a part of the solution. And I appreciate you guys for watching. We'll see you on the next video.
Live. I'm going to wait a few minutes for more people to join. Hello, family. TikTok family. Hey, hey. I'm going to wait a few minutes. Let everybody get in. Let's go get in. So we can go over some details. I don't want anybody to miss it. Hey, good evening. Don't want anybody to miss anything, so I'm going to wait a few minutes before I get started. Got some important information to share. Hello, hello, all my wonderful followers. Hello. All right, all right. We loading up. All right, come on in, my people. I got some news for you. What we're getting ready to do. Awesome. Email me. I'll tell you what to do with that for your child support. You gotta send that to the office for it. Hello. No bad news. All good news. I'm just going to give you some information that's going to help everybody do these things right. All right, all right. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and get started. So, I hope everybody has had a wonderful weekend. And I hope that everybody that has been following has gotten into the Telegram page. It's doing awesome. Everybody's sharing information. We're learning new things. I'm definitely putting extra documents that are very helpful in the Telegram. I'm able to communicate with everybody and see everybody's messages, and definitely it's working out great. It's definitely working out great. So if you haven't got your invite to the Telegram, please go on my email so I can link it to you easier. Some people are going on YouTube. I don't get a chance to go to YouTube like I need to check messages once I post this on YouTube. So please go to my email. I'll make sure it's linked so I can definitely get the link to you to Telegram and also continue to answer your questions and make sure that you're on the right steps for your journey. First thing I'd like to go over is, okay, some do's and don'ts regarding these 1099s. And what we're finding out as people continue to do it is that they're not educating themselves on the process. Okay. And I don't know if anybody didn't break it down for you, but I'm here to break it down for you nice and slow. All right. Because I want you to do it correctly so you don't cause yourself any problems. Now, some people are stating that they are being successful and some are not. And one thing I will say is that You have to think about the fact that under the government, you are considered a minor until you claim your state. And I know some people say, hey, I don't want to do the birth certificate authenticating and all that. But understand this. There's a reason that they have that option there. I'm not saying you got to do anything. I'm just saying what works. And you got to kind of think about it. If you're putting the government on notice with putting your documents in, sending it to the government agencies, saying, hey, I'm changing my political status. I'm letting you know I'm awake. I'm letting you know I have my information together. That way, when you decide to send that 1099A, they know that you know. You see what I'm saying? You have submitted your documentation. You have let the government know. The Attorney General knows. The Secretary of State knows. The Treasury knows. The IRS knows. Because you sent them your information stating that you have changed your status. You have at least authenticated your birth certificate to say I'm awake and I am no longer a minor and I can handle my own estates, my own affairs. And that's the whole point of doing it. Because one thing about it, you put them on notification first or even in the process of why you're doing things, and then you are secure with knowing you did your due diligence. But like I said, to each his own, you are able to do it however you choose, but it makes sense to me to let them know I'm awake and now I'm going to access my funds. Okay, now understand, doing a 1099A, this is not a bank. This is not something your cousin and your mama or anybody else can just go into. Okay, excuse me one second. Let me grab this paper. Anybody just can't go into the trust. Okay, now you definitely need to understand how it goes and study this stuff. I'm putting everything in Telegram so you have access to understand how all of this works. But when you are paying your bills, okay, we're going to start there, paying your bills, you are allowing the company, the light bill, your mortgage company, your car note company, you're allowing them to be your trustee. Okay, you have to have a trustee in order to not be committing, you're not committing fraud by trying to access funds yourself. Okay, you don't want to end up in federal prison, even though they got cable, but you don't want to go to federal prison. So let's try and do the best we can to follow the procedure. So when you do your bills, you're going to, what did I do with the form? I didn't bring the form in. When you do your bills, make sure that you are the lender, okay? You are the lender when this, because you lent them your money off from the beginning. So you're going to put your information in the top, okay? And you're going to put their information in the bottom. They are the borrowers. And you're going to make sure that you check that box because they pay the debt back, the little box that says who's responsible, okay? One thing about putting your the company in, you want to send it to the corporate office. You don't want to send it to customer service because they are not going to know what to do with it, okay? Send it to, like, your mortgage company. They have a payoff department. They have a customer service email. Now, if you go on 1099online.com, it asks for an email. It's freezing. Ooh. See, they don't like me talking to y'all. That's what it is. Email me for the Telegram link. Okay. All right. All right. Am I back? Am I still freezing? Am I good? I know they're messing with the live. Let me know when to stop freezing. Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to know about Korea. All right. So, no, she didn't. Okay. So, make sure that you send it to the corporate office, and also Google an email address or go in the website. There's some type of email. If you can't find one, so be it. But do your due diligence of trying to find an email. Why? Because they get it a lot faster. Okay? Make sure you get the email. The email is kj.asnsoveering@yahoo.com. I'll post it. Look in some of my previous videos. It may be in there. Or I'll put it on top of the bio. The link for consulting, it's not working right. So I'm going to have to remove it and put another one there so you guys can make your appointments, your dates, make the little payment to hold your spot. Okay? I have to reduce the consultations to 30 minutes. They're Mondays and Wednesday evenings, and if you need morning appointments, it'll be on the schedule, like 9 a.m. to 10, okay, or 9:30. So, doing the consultations, we'll have that in order. But, again, going back to the 1099s, I don't want you guys messing this up for yourselves. Please take your time and do them correctly. If you have some questions, go in a Telegram because I got samples in there. I got details of how to send things, where to send things. We're definitely making sure that you have all the tools you need to get this done. When you're submitting for your bills, you are not doing month to month, okay? You're going to do the yearly amount. Calculate your yearly amount. If your gas bill $250 a month, do times 12, okay? Do a little bit over that amount because you want to make sure it's a credit. So definitely make sure you're covering yourself. Your car note, pay it in full plus that interest that for a payoff. You're sending it to the payoff department. Your mortgage, payoff department. You can send it to the CEO under his name if you choose, but I sent my mortgage directly to the payoff department because that's who's paying it off. When you get your 1099A, it says accept it. Give it a few days, and then, because it's 10 days for it to get processed, give them that 10 days, and then contact your mortgage company or your car company. And discuss the arrangements of the process with them. And I'm going to type out the process of what needs to be submitted with what, the 1099 OID, the 1040V, and the 1096 that they need to process. So even if they got it, and they probably have received it with the packet, you still want to confirm over the phone because it's being recorded. Okay, you've got to have your proof. I did say the 1099 OID. So that's your proof. And then you ask for an email or a fax number. That way, you're sending a confirmation in writing that they're processing your payment in full. Okay? It works wonderfully. If they agree over the phone, you get the person's name and say, thank you for our conversation. I'm just confirming again in writing. Ooh, it's freezing. Okay. They don't want me telling y'all. That's what this is. They don't want me telling you nothing. Okay. Is it unfreezing? Okay. Are we unfreezing? Are we good? All right. I see a yes. Still freezing. Okay. Let me know when it's not freezing.
Steve Williams, founder and president of CreditRepairShop.com, and in today's video, we're going to talk about 1099C debt cancellation or cancellation of debt, what it is, what you can do, and to not be afraid of it, because I get a lot of people that say, man, I got this debt cancellation, what do I do, how does it affect my tax refund, all these questions, I'm going to answer them for you here and tell you what you can do. And let's jump right into the video. First, here is the definition. Form 1099-C, according to the IRS, nearly any debt you owe is canceled, forgiven, or discharged becomes taxable income to you. You'll receive a 1099-C cancellation of debt from the lender for the lender that forgave the debt. Sorry about that. So now let's move over here to the IRS, because we're going to get our information directly from them. We're not going to, go to some other websites. So here we go here. This is the real deal. You can read it here straight from the IRS. Look right here, straight from the IRS. Let's move down. So basically, we don't have to make this hard for you. If you settled a debt with an original creditor or even with a debt collector where they are saying that they're forgiving the debt or that you did a debt settlement and they're going to try to write off the remaining amount, you can get that letter, that 1099-C forgiveness of debt forgiveness, cancellation of debt. And basically what that's saying is that they're going to consider that as income to you. They're going to say that that money that they wrote off that you didn't have to pay because you received that money either in services or you received it in cash or in credit, if you used a credit card or payday loan or some type of way that you received the service or the money, they're going to say that that was considered income to you because you had use of that financial instrument, so to speak. So when they file it, what they're doing is they're wanting to get either a 100% write-off or the remaining write-off of what they did not collect from you. Now, what's going to happen is that when the IRS gets that, they're going to stack that on top of what you have as your gross income. And then you could end up, depending on your situation, you could end up where you either have a higher tax burden or, if you own a business or you have write-offs, it may not affect you. But with most people, what it's done is it's taken them into another income bracket, and it has affected their income tax refund that they were expecting to get. So it was something that was like a shock to them. And then also, some people said that they received the 1099-C and what to do with it. Well, I'm going to tell you, if you receive it before you file your taxes, you better include it in there because the IRS is waiting to see if you will include it. And even if you don't include it, you're probably going to get caught on the other side because the debt collector or the original creditor filed that with their taxes. So if it catches up with you right away or it's going to catch up with you later, regardless, they're going to catch up. It's going to catch up with you because they're filing these documents and the IRS is paying attention to these 1099-Cs. They're paying attention to all the 1099 income that is being reported because we're becoming a gig economy. One of the things that I had noticed is that this year that was different than all the other years that I filed my taxes for my company is that I'm receiving 1099s from all of the businesses that I do business with. And the IRS is expecting me to report that. So it's not where you're just lumping it in to your all of the money that you made and you're just reporting it. Now it's like an extra process where the IRS is comparing what you report and what other people report that they gave you. So now let's talk about some of the exemptions to the cancellation of debt. It says right here, amounts canceled as gifts, bequests, where someone, you know, gave it to you, devices or inheritance, you inherited the money, certain qualified student loan cancellations, they won't penalize you for it. The other ones here is other educational repayment or loan forgiveness programs, and you're going to have to consult with your tax professional on this here, and programs that provide health services in certain areas. With so if you got an educational loan that was forgiven or the repayment plan was reduced and you're in the health services field, some of those will not go against you as income for the debt cancellation. Amounts of the canceled debt that would be deducted if you as a cash basis taxpayer paid it. And a qualified purchase price reduction given by the seller. Like the seller can't try to say, well, hey, I'm writing this off because I gave them a discount. That's not gonna work. Any pay per performance success payments that reduce the principal balance of your home mortgage under the Home Affordable Modification Program, and then amounts from total of a permanent disability. So if you were disabled or something happened and they can't put that on you that way. And any amounts that meet the requirements of any of the following exclusions aren't included in income, even though they are cancellation of debt. Now, here are some other exclusions from gross income is debt canceled in a Title 11 bankruptcy case, debt canceled from the extent insolvent. So if you went insolvent, this is the one that probably a lot of you would qualify for, because if you just had money problems, but you're going to have to consult with a tax person. I'm not the person that you would talk to about this. I'm just telling you that this is available. Cancellation of qualified real property business indebtedness. Cancellation of qualified principal resident indebtedness that is discharged subject to an arrangement that is entered into an evidence in writing before January 1st, 2021. So these are the exclusions that you can have. And now I want to click here, show you the form real quick. What you could do is you could fill out this form here and you could see where you would fall, or you could sit with a tax professional and they'll let you know what's going to be the effect of the 1099 that is filed, that debt forgiveness that was filed. You know, I won't say it filed against you, that was filed in your name for canceled debt. But just so you know, to review real quick, is that a 1099-C debt cancellation, and we'll go back here, because a lot of people, when they get it, they are very afraid. They're like, what is this? And it's just saying that an original creditor, or it could potentially be a debt collector that you did a settlement with, they're filing that, or it could be a debt collector that's just giving up on the money and they want to get a 100% write-off on the debt that they want the IRS to they're notifying the IRS that they canceled the debt, they've forgiven the debt, and that they want the IRS to consider that as income given to you. That's what they want to do. Also, when they cancel that debt, they cannot sell it to another debt collector and come after you for it once they do that. And that goes for an original creditor and it goes for a debt collector. So don't panic if you get it. There's options. You need to review what you owe with your taxes. If you are used to doing your own taxes, you could just figure that in there to see where you're going to be at. If you're not used to doing your own taxes, just take it to your tax professional and have them work out several scenarios to see what would be the best option for you to file your taxes, understanding that you have that 1099-C debt cancellation filed with the IRS for a debt that was forgiven that you owed. So if you need help, please contact us at thecreditrepairshop.com. If you don't have your credit reports and scores, remember everything starts there. You can actually look at your credit reports and see if that matches the 1099-C. Before I forget, something that you should always do is to watch out for inflated 1099-Cs that are being filed. And the way that you could do that is you could look at your credit reports and you could see what was the original amount, and they might try to balloon that up so they could get a bigger write-off. That is not legal for them to do that, but you got to have information to dispute that. And the number one way to do it is to get copies of your credit reports and look at the amount, the original amount of the debt that's filed on your credit reports, and you can use that to counter what they're trying to file as a 1099-C against you. So get your credit reports. You can click the link below, go to www.your3scores.com. I'd really appreciate it. Grab your credit reports and scores from there. Please like my videos. This helps us be able to help more people. So you're actually doing your part by liking the videos. Also, click to be notified of new videos that I post. And also post your comments. And also share this page with your friends, family, people that you know. Recommend it. I really appreciate it. And I respond to all of the comments. And then subscribe to this channel if you're not already subscribed to the Credit Repair Shop channel. Thank you, and you have a great day.